I do know who you are. I do know what I want. We have a very particular set of skills. Skills we've acquired over a certain amount of time. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. So I will find you, and I will interview you for the Gaffer Tapes.
State your name and record.
Gary McCann, 12 and a half seasons at Hendon Football Club. And I'm in my second season at Hampton and Richmond Borough Football Club.
12 and a half years?
It was, Dave, yes.
You know, I sort of knew it was 10. I remember going past the 10 mark. 12 and a half, I suppose. And we'll ditch back into your playing bit because we know each other a long time, and you played on, not under me, it was under Frank, but I was in the club.
You come into the club as I was sort of suffering when I felt fighting the injury.
Your knees were struggling.
I'd had a couple of operations by the time you come in, and it was starting to feel like it was the end, and it was, you know, felt it should have been only the beginning, but it was starting to feel like the end. But yeah, 5 or 6 years playing.
But I was never, you know. And I've spoke to different people who have done this with, and you were one of the ones I from 10 minutes in, I knew you'd go into management. I always felt that, I remember thinking early on, even at Harrow, I remember you coming in and training at Harrow Borough before that and talking to you and just thinking, he gets this game, you know, he gets it.
Yeah, I think it was something that interested me, Dave. I was always interested in that, you know, the setup of teams, the shape of teams, the counteracting of certain shapes within teams, even at a playing level, you know. And I sort of, from an early age, took an interest in that. You know, it just followed on from there, really.
And when you think back in the dressing rooms when you were playing, who?
I've just been around football. It's felt like, you know, around football for such a long time. You know, like everyone has. I mean, I don't speak like I'm anything different, but you know, my whole working week from the age of 5 or 6 was 6 or 7 days football. If I wasn't watching it, I was playing it, and when I was watching it, I was watching it with an in-depth view, even at a young age. And it felt, you know, it was always something that just, you know, was there in me. I just, you know, when it was the transition from, you know, playing to managing, it was made a lot easier because I had that mindset I was always going to, you know, maybe do it. It come a little earlier than anticipated in terms of my career and in terms of my management time starting. But you know, it was an easy transformation, being injured, going straight into it. But you know, it's just felt right from the, you know, early stages.
Yeah, but I might be wrong, but did you go straight? You didn't do assistant. Straight into the number one.
It was, you know, I stepped away from football, and I, you know, went and done just my young managers coaching badges. You know, just a manager kiddies team.
Yeah,
my children were just starting out there, and they'd gone into different teams, and I started managing and coaching, you know, youth, kids football. But even with them, I wanted to be structured and organised. I wanted to make the sessions, you know, evolve and progress. And, you know, I wanted to see it transform to the pitch. And you know, I think some of the kids were looking at me turning up to just play with a smile on their face. I've got cones out and tactic boards. And, you know, but it was just how I was. And, you know, and it was something that for a couple of years I really enjoyed. But I'd had 2 years, I bought Chelsea season tickets because the kids were at that age, and we've still got them now. Mm. You know, it was 20 odd years ago, you know, it was a couple of years away from the non-league world as such, and just, you know, it was a contact that I kept with Graham Etchell, which, you know, ignited an opportunity that was maybe one that I couldn't turn down at the time. And I did contemplate, you know, when Graham had sort of, I'd spoke to Graham on a regular basis, used to, the sports shop at the time, so I used to supply the kit and balls and different bits and pieces and bibs, and so I was always in contact with the club, and Graham, we always spoke football. When I spoke to Graham, I'd be on the phone to him for, you know, a period of time, and it sort of, you know, just transpired from there. And they were having a really tough time, and I was speaking to Graham one day, and he had said about it, and I told him what I was doing, and, you know, and it'd be something I'd look to do at some stage. And it just developed from there. I had a phone call from Graham, just completely out the blue, that, Now, would it be something I'd be interested in doing, speaking to Ivor Arbiter at the time, who was the chairman, you know, with the full process of maybe taking the, you know, the first team on? And it was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. I spoke to my wife about it. It was something I didn't want to pass up. I wanted to explore. Ivor come and picked me up, took me to a golf club for lunch, and
lovely man.
Yeah, absolute gentleman. One of my best experiences in football around him. He was a real gentleman.
You know, I just interrupt you. I remember when I had the chance to go there. I went there as Frank Murphy's assistant. But I remember when the job came up, and I remember speaking to Bob Dowie, who had played and managed under Ivor as a chairman. And he said, "You've got to take it. You will not get a better chance as a first job with a better chairman. He'll be like your grandfather, you know." And he that's how he was, Gary.
He had that approach right from the day dot. He used to call me. The way it worked, he took me out. The next morning he offered me the job, and I was sort of, "Am I ready? Is it right?" But it felt like it was a win-win situation. There'd been 23, 24 games of not winning. They were at the bottom end of the table. I just felt, well, look, let's go in, experience it, enjoy the ride, see if it's something that I'm gonna, you know, really want to be doing, you know, further than this season, and the experiences of that year will tell me so. I went in. Ivor, as you just said, he was very hands-on. I used to speak to him most days. He supported me as much as he could budget wise and, you know, we managed to turn that season around. And they offered me the job permanently in that summer. I remember speaking to you, Dave. Should I take it full time? Is it something? Because the budget was about to be cut. There was a lot of problems going on behind the scenes there was going to be some difficulty further down the road. And I remember speaking to yourself and a few other, you know, people that I was close to in football too. And I just felt, you know, it just felt right to continue the ride. And, you know, and I am one of them type of people that don't like to, you know, step away from a challenge. And, you know, and also I felt a duty to, you know, to see him through the tough times on the back of what we had. And
we certainly did that. But just the thing on the management thing, and I know it's one of them stupid hypothetical questions, but the manager that walked in the door to the manager that walked out the door, to come to Hampden. Tell me the three big changes off the top of your head, the three big things that you felt you had changed from the day you walked in. Obviously, experience does a million things to us. What's the three big things that would have done to you, the young guy who walked in guy that walked out?
Some would say, you know, with my third and fourth year were the toughest years. I mean, the initial year I went in, you know, and the second year, Ivor actually supported the budget in the second year, the same as what we had. But year three and year four, we had, you know, we had a budget that was not worthy of a Combined Counties team. And, you know, what it made me do, it made me appreciate, you know, hard work, hard graft, good people, reliable people. And it's really formed my remit now for assembling my teams now, is that you don't just sign good players, you sign good people.
Yeah.
And I think when you find yourself in that position, we're not much to work with, and you know, and you're looking at people as over players at times. And I think it's what my teams were formed of. We were very together. We were, you know, we created a sort of, you know, a sort of us against the world.
Did you learn that? Is that something that came within that period, the early period of your year?
Because
we don't know it when we start, but we.
No, and I think that's what was created, that siege mentality. You know, everyone expected us to get relegated. Everyone expected us to get beat, because it was well documented at the times that, you know, we were having some tough times. It was, club was looking like it was going to, you know, be, you know, wrapped up. It was in the press. You know, we were looking like losing our home. It was very close to that. So it was real difficulty. So for me to be at the front of it all, and, you know, yes, it created an easy create of the environment that was required. That siege, as I just said, siege mentality. And as soon as, you know, we sort of assembled the right sort of players that fell into that, people as such, we managed to sort of starve off relegation in them sort of periods, and we started to form something that, you know, the working relationship with a group of supporters that took it on. David Bedford was a big part of that as well. And, you know, and we, you know, the rest is history, really. It's, you know, the club has evolved and moved into new surroundings and is still here now. And I'd like to think in that early part of my managerial career where I was cutting my teeth and learning my trade, you know, we played a big part, you know, in securing the long-term future of that football club, because it was in a very, very precarious
position. And it's sort of, there's similarities, really, between your time at Hendon and Gordon Bartlett's time at Wealdstone, because you both had it, both each club, when it was in turmoil. It was moving from ground to shore to ground shore, trying to keep it together. And to be fair, you both came out the other side, you know. But doing that, talk about that, managing teams that don't have their own ground.
Well, that in itself was tough. And I used to, you know, lean on Gordon a lot. Gordon become a very, very close friend of mine, you know, within football. You know, he'll tell you that the conversations we had, we were experiencing the same problems that they had, that they had come through the other side of. You know, a club being, you know, a nomadic life is, in any, you know, life, especially football world, is tough. You have nowhere to train, you have nowhere to call your own, you're just turning up on match days and playing your games. It's extremely difficult. You know, you have to create a base away from there. You know, we had the hive for a long period of time, for about 4 or 5 years at Barnett's home for our training facilities. We had our own locker room there. We used to sit in the bar and create our own little office before training and such like. And, you know, done all our work from the hive, really, and then just turned up for games. But Gordon was a guiding light for us in all of it, if I'm being honest. He was, you know, there was lots of dark days and, you know.
And talk me through, you know, people, you scares and see, there's the normal interview. See, the normal interview with a normal reporter is there's dark days, but not this. Tell me about what that's like for you.
Yeah.
As a person, the dark days, you know, what were the dark days and how dark were you within it?
I think the dark days were the decisions I had to make at a stage in my managerial career where I was looking at my own progression and my own ambition and my own next plateau, next stage of my career. And I had two, in that early 5 years, I had two or three options that, you know, I look back now and they were more likely mistakes to not go. And I think that, you know, you make decisions with your heart when you find someone in difficulty, you know, and Hendon was part of me. I played there for a long time. It become ingrained. I was known as sort of Mr. Hendon for that sort of period. And then the decisions that I had to make to either stay or go, which effectively were, you know, facing me, I was making dutiful decisions more so than professional decisions. And you know, when I'd come through the other side of the decision, I'd sort of, there'd be a period of, you know, regret to a degree. As much as I love the club.
You have to keep quiet as well.
Exactly. You've got to be professional. You've got work to do. But there was, you know, there was times when I sort of looked back and I felt I'd damaged my own career for the well-being of a football club that I love dearly and still do. You know, it's a club that, I care deeply about. But, you know, most of my decisions were dutiful more so than professional. And they were the periods where was a challenge for me mentally, you know, then periods after and looking back and, you know, and looking at where we was at, no ground, no, you know, and as it got to the, you know, the latter stages of when SJP become a possibility, I had another option before we went into SJP, you know, a couple of options in the year before.
I remember speaking to you a couple of years before that even, sort of.
Yeah, there was a couple of different
things. You know, like, you may want to think about, it's now's the time to go.
It definitely felt like it was coming to that period, but we were still in a transitional period. We still didn't have a stadium and we didn't have a home and there was, you know, it was getting closer. And I made a couple of decisions, you know, based on the fact I want to see it through, see it into their home, get some stability, get some strength from home surroundings. And I've seen that happen. You know, we went in there, within our second year, we had the playoff, second year at SJP, we had the playoff defeat against Dulwich, which led to me with another option and another decision to make. And I just felt at that time, the time was right, and you know.
I get that because we've known each other a long time, and we have spoke to each other, and it's not just a one way street. I've spoke to you for advice during my time. I think managers do that when they trust each other. But the the loyalty thing's a big thing for me, because I've spoken to other people and sort of you, and your staff have been around you for, you know, Freddie and you know, just, they've been around as well.
Know, I've, all the decisions I've made, I've done it with the, you know, with the backing and support of them staff as well. I mean, Mark, my physio, he's been around me 12 years now. Freddie's been around me only half a season, less than, you know, what I've been in management. So them people have been, the staff, them have been invaluable to me. Again, loyal, trusting, supportive, you know, management team has, you know, has been, you know, and every decision I've made, Dave, I've made it not just my with myself.
Spoke to them, go on.
And as much as you speak to family and you speak to people outside the football club, the real decisions need to be made within. And we were pulled, you know, and we were split at times. You know, we all wanted progression. We all had an ambition. We all wanted, but we also all fell in love with the football club. Mark and Freddie as well. And it just felt each time we had a decision to make. And what, you know, the dark days, you just said about the dark days, you know, when you're having your team dismantled every summer, which was nearly nigh on what happened with us, and you had to keep rebuilding. It would be mid-season, it would be the summer, and they're the times when you're thinking to yourself, you know, it felt like you were peeing in the wind a little bit at times, and that in itself can, you know, can be really challenging mentally. You know?
People don't see that.
Yeah.
They don't see the work that goes on to keep people, to then replace people, that sort of side of it. The other thing, sorry, before we leave staff, and it's a visual thing that was, you've always had lots of staff. I've always felt that, you know, to talk me through that.
I've never felt threatened by having good staff around me. I've never felt threatened by having good people around me. As much as anything, when we talk about signing players, you know, we check what type of people they are, as well as staff are no different. You want good people in within your management group. But, you know, all of my management team, I'm not shy to say they deserve more than they earn, you know, and a lot of my players deserved more than they earn. It was where we found ourselves. We had a budget that we had to maximise and stretch, and they done most of their work for me for pittance, really, and stayed trusting and valued and, you know, and professional in all fronts. But yeah, I do like to have good, you know, not good, a lot of staff. I mean, at the moment we're working with five. I have a first team coach. I have a goalkeeping coach. I've got Freddie, who's always been my assistant manager, which is maybe the one staff member that some don't have around them. It's either your first team manager or a first team coach. Yeah. But Freddie's been around me from day dot. He's one of, you know, he is my best mate outside of football, as well as being, you know, a very close confidant in football. And that manager, assistant manager, he's been bounced off of each other on a regular basis. He's different to me. He tends to wear a good cop hat most of the time. Yeah. He's liked and you know, in the change room, see him as, you know, Mr.
No,
Bubbly,
I know
Mr.
All about
Person.
Him.
You know,
yeah,
exactly.
He's a great lad.
He's, you know, that's worked. I've had to tend to wear the bad cop hat more often than not, but I have no problem with that, you know. It's
But what about the freshness of the staff then? Because, you know, to have them people around you for that amount of time, how do you reinvent that?
I think if I'm a staff was sitting in here with you, the demands I put on them on a regular basis, I'm quite demanding in how we go about things, in terms of the structure for training, in terms of the structure for games, I'm constantly at them, really. I don't let them rest. And as much as it's a happy management team, and I'd say that on, you know, that's a big key factor. I think it's a happy management team. They know I'm pretty demanding and professional, and I don't let that drop off. And to keep them hungry, success, you know, is what keeps everyone hungry. And, you know, we've achieved nothing yet. As much as some will look at us of what we've done at Hendon and what we've done in a new environment at Hampton, we've not done anything yet as a management team, as long as we've been together, and we want more.
Yeah, and when the door's shut on your management meetings, and there's only your management in there, can they rip into you and go, Gaffer, don't like this?
Do you understand?
How does that? Because I'm interested in that side of it.
I think the last decision lies with yourself always, because, you know, you know, the criticism tends to lie in your lap if you get it wrong. So, but I'm very open in our meets. We discuss shape, we discuss personnel within the shape. Everyone has an opinion. The goalkeeping coach, Mark, as well, in terms of the condition of players, in terms of the overload of players, fitness-wise. So we will have an open meeting and we will discuss, and I will take on board, you know, everyone's opinion and everyone's choice. And then we come to a happy medium. It's not always the exact starting 11 that I've picked. I will have a look at the different, and they make some really valid points, and I think that's what keeps them occupied and hungry, like what you've just touched on. You're not just shutting them out from the real big decisions that are required in the football club. They feel part of every signing we make, every training session we have.
Essential.
Exactly. And every team we pick. And if I have success within a team I pick, I don't put it all out. I mean, I watch these managers talk about their tactic, them and me and me and me and me. No, it's not. It's us. It's always us. I'll always share the praise as much as I possibly can with them, and I'll take the criticism. That's never aimed at them, and I'll never let them be criticised.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's what keeps them,
And has that ever failed? Has there been times with staff members where you've come to the end of your relationship professionally?
One in question, Scotty Cousins was part of our management team, and you know, he played a big part in the successes of making that transformation from player. He was my captain.
He played for me as well, great player, great lad,
and he was part of our management team. His first taste of coaching was with us, and his first year in, he replaced Junior Lewis, who had gone on to pastures new, and his first season we got to the playoff final. We had a great group of players that year, and it was a really positive season. We had a real positive changing room, and we got beat by the big spenders in Margate in that playoff
final.
Was that
the game, the sending off after 20 minutes?
It was a joke, because 72 hours later the red card was rescinded. We didn't even feel it was a yellow card on the
that
day.
That nearly makes it worse.
It does.
No, I was right beside it. I remember being right beside the child. I was stunned.
Yeah, it didn't even feel a yellow card on the day, but it was, it was one of them moments again that, you know, challenge you mentally. And I had that summer to sort of contemplate it.
But going back to Scotty,
I mean, we were getting to a stage where it was getting a little bit, there was a bit of friction between us, and it blew up in a game at Enfield. It just blew up, and it's one of the sad moments, because you end up having a big blazing row, and there was no coming back from it, because it was in front of players, it was in front of supporters, and it was over nothing, really. Absolutely nothing.
Was that a build-up of differences?
Differences, I would say. I said, when we got through, I mean, Scotty's a very technical player, and he was a very technical coach, and he wanted a very technical team, I get that totally, I just felt that was getting away from us a little bit, and I needed a bit more physicality in the team, a bit more steel, and I've always tried to get the balance right now, and I just felt that year we didn't have the balance right in that team. We had too many, I don't want to say tippy-tappy players, but too many players of the time. And it just started to distance itself, and it blew up there, and we shook hands, we spoke since, not too much, but we spoke since, and, I think it's important,
the one thing about you, when I speak to you, on record, off the record, wherever we meet, you're a very positive man, and that'll come out in leaps and bounds in this. But I think it's good for people. There is also another side at times, I hadn't even thought of Scott. I was just asking about.
Yeah.
But is there a reason that maybe Scotty got the time in his life? I know we're guessing. Where he felt he wanted to be a manager anyway. I think that happened sometime with staff, doesn't it?
It could have been. That was never shared with me when we'd had discussions later down the line. It was never. I just think it was that a breakdown in a working relationship where we just see different ways. And when that happens, if you're not all on the same page as a management team, that needs to be acted on, David,
because
players will latch on to that. Players will see that as a weakness in your management team. And how it was dealt with was, I'd like to have seen the situation maybe recovered and ironed out. It would have been a possibility, but I think the way it ended up and the way, the way it ended was maybe for the better. And in the end, I think that was the season that we stayed up on the last game of the season, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, it was a tough season. You know, it was a tough season from day one to yeah. the very last kick.
And that's a different. You know, you've in sort of two paragraphs, you've talked about playoff final
mm-hmm.
to staying up on the last day mm-hmm. of the season. They're two very different. Well, I think things to deal with, you know.
Our budget, Dave, and I'd never ever, and I still don't now, even with the league we're in now and where we find it, I'd never use budget as a reason. As much as we can all,
as much as it is the reason.
Well, Dave, that's it's the truth we can all, you know, we can all express that we're great coaches, we're great tacticians, we're great motivators, we're organised, we're professional.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it's all about recruitment.
Yeah.
It's never, you know, it's never anything other than recruitment. Well, how easier is recruitment when you've got money? A lot easier.
Yeah.
So it does go back to money, but you have what you've got. You've got your hand that you've been dealt, you get on with it. At Hendon, we never ever had a budget that was worthy of anything other than a relegation fight.
Yeah.
We never used that as a reason or an excuse if we was in a relegation battle. And we never shouted it from the rooftops that we shouldn't be in a playoff fight if we was. And I felt over the period of the last 7 or 8 years I was at Hendon, we built three teams over a 2 or 3 year period that resulted in a playoff final. You know, at the early stages, it was a fight. There was a turnover of players. There was a fight to get that team right. And we knew what the balance right was. Well, I felt I did into what was required. And by the end of year two or year three, we were close to playoffs each year. But at the end of that playoff or that playoff push, the team tended to get dismantled because
people picked it off. Had a few conversations myself with you
I think in the early days of my management, I've spat my dummy out with you. I think
when
you was at Wimbledon or something and something. But that's my your early inexperienced days of management. Yeah. You look back and you laugh at now.
Yeah,
but,
well, yeah, we never you, fell out over it, did
no,
we?
Not
we,
at all. Just not at all. But you know, it was what I was dealing with on a regular basis. Your manager's phoning up. I like this one, and I see he's not on contract. Can I? And it was, I know the 7 day approach was in place, but you know, it just felt like that's what we were putting out fires on a week to week, month to month basis.
But on that stuff, you see, supporters sort of see you, they see me and you in separate dugouts, and we have a hug and a cuddle after the game and a laugh, and we walk off. They never see the other bits.
Of course they don't.
You know, this is part of what this is about. It's to open the door for supporters to see in the dressing room, if you like.
Yeah.
The bits where you have heated discussions with people who you respect and who are friends.
Totally. Yep.
Because our job comes first, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. And I've had a couple of them this year. You know.
Yeah. Want to enlighten me on some?
Sorry. Well, enlighten me on some. I said more so than heated discussions. We've had two or three 7 day approaches that I've been, you know, disappointed with, but we've ended up being able to keep them players. But as much as anything, I think, you know, when you're in opposite dugouts with people you know, which has happened this season, you know, I think that, you know, you're in such a mindset to get one over that.
The
manager that you're close with and you speak to, that you can get lost in it all. And we had a win this year that I felt a manager in the opposite dugout didn't show the correct amount of respect and you know, and graciousness in defeat. And that's disappointed me a little bit. I've not spoke to him since, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, and I think in the heat of battle, we all can get emotionally charged and get away from each other.
Supporters think we don't care, don't they?
Oh, well, if only they knew. I mean, what we take home, my wife will tell you. I mean,
well, tell me.
Defeats, I need to be left to myself. She knows that I'll more likely go to work on a Sunday if I've had a defeat, because I don't want to be sitting in the confines of a, you know, living room. Even if there's football on telly, I'll get myself out in the taxi where you can sort of clear your mind, and by sort of 1-2 o'clock on a Sunday, I'm back where I need to be. Not completely, but you know, it stays with me. A defeat stays with me until the next game. It hurts. And you know, I'm not good company when I go home. And you know, we've got anything planned when we've had a defeat, she knows it's maybe not, you know, and it's maybe why we've not planned too much Saturday nights. We either do it on a Friday night or we do it on a Monday night.
Yeah.
Because you know, Saturday nights emotionally, I can be either damaged emotionally.
Yeah.
I can be on a high emotionally when I just want to sit there with a three or four bottles of beer and enjoy the football. Yeah. Or, you know, I can sometimes be sitting there with a pounding headache. I've felt the stresses of the day, you know.
And that's after...
Could be after a win.
No, I'm saying after the length of time that you've done
it. Even now, every game, I say this to my players, I manage every game like it's my first and my last together. And I have that mindset, you know, that, you know, you never know when your first one, you know, when your last one's going to be. Treat it like it's your first one. Yeah. Never take anything for granted. Never get complacent. Never get, you know, loose in your organisation and your structure of how you work and such like. Because you can. I think complacency is the biggest killer in football.
Absolutely.
If you're on the pitch or you're in the dugout. So.
Does that, you say that with a real, and you're absolutely right. Absolutely, I know it's right because I've fallen into the trap of it. Have you fallen into the trap of it yourself at times?
No, Dave, I don't think like this is the
I don't mean now, I mean no, through your career.
And that's why I think I'm still ambitious and still looking to, you know, to kick on, and I want to kick on within the football club. But at Hendon, I couldn't afford to get complacent. You know, each year we evolved, each year we had a turnover of players, each year we were looking to build, and it was just a continued progression and a continuous sort of, you know, involving football club really in terms of the squad. So there was no time to be complacent. We were never in a position of comfort. We was always either fighting or sort of fighting at the bottom, or even if we was in mid-table, we were starting to prepare for the season, the following season. I mean, at Hampton, coming into a new club and new surroundings, and you've not earned your stripes, and you've got all them new supporters and new directors and new chairman and such like to win over. No complacency at all. And I'm not the type of individual, like I've just said about how I am with my management team. I don't feel I, you know, allow anyone to be complacent. I'm always putting different demands on players and different challenges on players, and the same with a management team. And I suppose that's a sign of someone who doesn't ever feel that he's in a position of comfort. He's, you know, he's driven.
You're still striving, I think.
Striving and driving. You know,
and we'll come on to your hunger and your appetite a bit later. The thing that came to mind there was you said that you go to work on a Sunday in the cabin. Steve McKim has done this.
Yeah.
And he does the same thing. He'll go to work on a Saturday night after a game to get his head cleared. So I just want to warn the public of taxi drivers at the weekend. Be very careful.
Don't be asking to go south of the river. Yeah. But no, it is. It's a place. I mean, it can be quite a lonely job.
That's
to say it is.
That's the point I'm getting at. Yeah.
I don't like to say this because it's wrong, because you want your family around you all time, and I love them dearly. And Dawn is more like my biggest motivator. She's my biggest picker up. You know, they say who motivates a motivator. Well, it's definitely the wife for me, and she knows what to say, when to say it. But that little bit of time, that lonesome time you get in a taxi is sometimes exactly what you just need to clear your mind and clear your thoughts. I've heard a lot of managers in interviews say they go into a dark room, shut the door, you know, and just take it all in from there. Well, it's no different really going into the taxi. You go in the taxi, all you're doing is drop, you know, off
thinking
to different
about other
places,
stuff.
Thinking about other stuff, and it has a tendency to clear your head. I haven't done an awful lot of Sundays this year.
Yeah.
I've tried to make sure where it's been pretty, you know, stressful. Management is stressful to a degree, isn't it? But I've tended to try and make sure my Sundays are with my family, as I've got a little bit, you know, more experience and a bit longer in the tooth. I've tended to be able to manage myself a little bit better. But there's still times where I feel like, you know, it's defeat hurts more than others.
And just, you know, we're trying to go over 12 and a half years in sort of 20 minutes. So it comes to the latter stages of Hendon, your time at Hendon. And, you know, I'd spoke to you, as I said, a few times about you need to think about your next move. And but, you've seen them into the new ground. You've got the Gary McCann stand.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, yep, which yep, is yep. That's what an achievement in itself as well. But so just talk me through the last days, if you like. So first of all, the Hampton thing and why you thought it was time to go. We'll start with that.
Well, I think it goes back 3 or 4 years prior to me making that decision. I'd put two of my best teams that I've put together was the Margate playoff final team without question. I mean, I felt that that was, as you know, resilient. There was a lot of 1-0s in there. It was a very resilient, strong, you know, together team. Whereas the team that we got beat in that playoff final and had a, you know, felt like we had another rebuild again, and we got our teeth into it because we had the carrot of a new stadium, a new ground, a new surroundings face in a sense. So it was quite an easy decision, that one. But
yeah,
when we put the team together that got to the Dulwich playoff final, it was more like the most exciting team I've ever managed. It had a front line that was feared. We had 5 players in the front line that, you know, played in a front four that I think was as strong as anything I'll ever manage as a collective.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic group of players. It was very together. We thought we would do it. You know, we'd done the double over Dulwich that year. Mm. So we were confident going into the playoff final. The only fear was that we had a really young team, and you know, and there was going to be 4,500 people there at Dulwich, and it was how we would cope with that. But got off to a great start, got out in front, got pegged back in the second half, went to extra time, went to penalties, and we got beat on penalties. So
yeah,
I don't think there's any more damaging defeat than a playoff final defeat in front of 4,500 people
on
penalties. And I remember standing, sitting out on the pitch sort of while the crowd was on celebrating, and I just kept it to myself for a period. You know, I didn't go in the change room. I sort of had about 10-15 minutes to myself, and even in them 10-15 minutes, there was an overriding emotion taking over that, have I got it in me to do this again? Have I got it in me? Because this side, the front four was already lined up to four, you know, was to lined up to go, or 3 of the front four was. I knew that we were going to be losing players. We were had players in there earning money that, you know, that they were going to be able to double and treble elsewhere. And I knew it was going to be another rebuild. And in that period, sitting on the pitch, it was already starting to play into my head. And I'd sort of, you know, and I took it away, took home, had a sort of week sort of away from the playoff final. And I think it was the week after the playoff final that, you know, just completely out of the blue, the Hampton situation arose. Mm. They'd made contact with Simon, and I asked permission to speak to myself. Dowse is one of my closest, you know,
he's good, right?
Pals in football now, and I used to speak to him regularly. And I think it was him who put my name forward, because he'd give me a heads up that he's advised Hampton to go out and get me and not advertise it. And you know, and I had a sort of a heads up, but without contact. And it just developed from there. Simon gave me permission to speak to him. I was in the position of just negotiating a new contract with Simon, and he'd been very, you know, very forthcoming, and you know, it was going really well. It was positive. You know, we were sort of it was at the stage where I was looking to maybe sign a new contract with Hendon. I was looking what else was out there. I felt that the club was still in a progressive mode, even though it was, you know, but the Hampton situation arose and gave me a real decision to make, Dave. And when you've had 12 years, 12 and a half years at a football club, you think of all the aspects. That is it the right type of club? Is there progression? Is it the level up, which was a big, big factor, because I, you know, 3 or 4 of the options I had been sort of offered in the previous times was the same level. It felt, although it was a better budget and maybe a bigger club, it was a sideways step.
Yeah.
This felt like it was the right step forward.
Yeah.
I'm a taxi driver. I've got a family that, you know, that you know, I care for, that I didn't want too much travel involved as well, Dave. So I was looking at the logistics of the location, and it just felt right, you know. So
that's the thing. That statement.
Yeah.
It just, you can't write that down.
No, you can't. You don't know it's gonna, Dave. You don't know when it's gonna fall in your lap and take your mindset to that place. And I'd looked at different, you know, options that were out there, if they ever developed, and there were certain clubs that I thought that could be a club that, you know, and Hampton was in that little batch of clubs that you think there may be one day, you know.
Yeah.
And I went and met the chairman, Graham Wood, who's a wonderful man who stepped aside now, along with Jack Labarz, who was the vice chairman at the time. Sat in front of them for an hour, you know, spoke football, spoke tactics, spoke
players. Can I just interrupt you? How much do the rest of the staff know about this bit?
What,
at that time, you know, Did the staff know?
I don't think I shared it with the staff. I might have put it in the group, in the management group. We have a management group.
Yeah.
When I was an hour away from the interview, I think I actually put it out just on the way.
And you cap it, yeah, yeah.
I said, I'm just on the way for an interview at a new surroundings or something along them sort of lines.
Yeah.
I'll share more with you after.
Yeah.
You know, it was something along them sort of lines, but it wasn't, it all happened very, very quickly. Mm. And I sat with Graham and Jax and you know, I think they gave me, they said, half hour just to go out and just have a walk about. And I come back in and they offered me the job. So it was, you know, it was a decision to make there and then. And, you know, I had a decision. They wanted to get someone in. They knew their side was about to be dismantled. They were already 3 weeks behind everyone else because of their own playoff final defeat. And Dowse was going across to Woking. They knew that he was going to be taking a good proportion of the team. So they needed to act quickly. So it was offered to me there and then, just within an hour of, you know, of the discussions. And went away, phoned the wife, you know, sort of had a bit of time to myself and just come over me that it was the right decision. I'm not going to take it into tomorrow or the next day. I'm going to make a decision now and then. And I went back in and I accepted the job. And that's very much where it was at, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't what I felt like, because I never never dwelled on the decision and I never let it, because on a couple of the other opportunities I had, I sort of let them roll 2 or 3 days and you overthink things.
Yeah.
And I just felt the timing of it with where I'd taken Hendon to that week before and where he was at, where the strength and the stability of the club was at, where it had its own home. I felt like I'd done my...
Yeah.
I'd done my, you know, my job. I'd done, you know, all what I'd set out to do is, you know, is to create a long-term, you know, stability and future for a football club I cared about. And I just felt for my own, if I'd have turned this one down, I'm not sure I'd have forgive myself going forward and been mentally in a good place.
Especially when you question decisions before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you've questioned yourself a couple of times, you'll get to the day when you go, no, this is the day. Yeah. So did you then...
They stayed with me, them decisions, Dave, as well. That's what I say, you know.
Yeah.
And you stay, you know, as much as you're focused on the job in hand, they still stay with
you. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they played their part in you know, in this decision.
Yeah.
And the fact it was Conference South, the fact it was a club that, you know, that I, you know, like everything about it felt like it was right, you know.
And so you obviously have to then leave Hendon and... And so how was that? How's that? How was it? How is it? How, you know, was Simon?
Do you know, I expect it to be a little bit better, Dave. And
really?
I've not shared to me. I was a little, I suppose, a little bit despondent, a little bit disappointed with, you know, with one or two things that went on and one or two things that was said that wasn't the truth. You know, and I say that and... You know, when you go from...
Well, I think you need to...
I'm going to touch. I'm not going to go in depth with it, but, you know, I had a long period of not speaking to a chairman I'd worked for a long time from my time of leaving Hendon to where I'm at now. And that in itself hurt me a little because he was someone that I'd given everything to. It was a football club I'd given everything to. But he obviously had his reasons, and I'm not sure to this day, you know, that...
You just didn't talk, did you?
Think he was being... he was being, I think, pulled from pillar to post for fans because the players... You know, and this is how non-league football works, and fans don't appreciate this and don't fully know. Players play for managers.
Yeah.
You know, as much as they want to have the mindset that they play for the badge, they play for the club, it's the manager they tend to play for. And I knew myself that team was going to be dismantled and pulled apart. There was one or two that were contracted that I'd secured with the following season in mind that give the club a bit of, you know, strength in, you know, with certain players. But there was always going to be a group of that players that followed me across to Hampton. I was left with three players in my changing room at Hampton. Yeah. Three players from the group that had been with Dowse the year before. So I was in an even lesser position to Hendon. Maybe in a better league and a more desirable league for players to be, you know, playing in. But, you know, it was always going to be the case that someone were going to come across with me.
Well, we've all done it. We've all done it all the time.
Because that's how players work.
Yeah.
They want to play with a manager. That
and managers. Exactly. And managers, because when you go in there and you
trust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly that.
And so was that the...
I think there was a little bit of that in there as well. I think, you know, some of the mistruths that I'd heard, you know, that, you know, I was orchestrating, you know, the contracted players of how they should, you know, play it to get out there. I stand here in front of you, I look you in the eye, my hand on my heart, and that's not me, and it was never me.
Yeah.
But we end up buying two of the players and, you know, paying a fee for two of the players. But, you know, there was one or two things said that hurt me, because it's not me. There's one thing I am is loyal, I'm trusting, and the club should have known that.
12 and a half years says it all, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But listen, it's water under the bridge now. The page has been turned, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, I've spoke to all the, you know, the people since, and, you know, and we've moved on from it. You know, it's but it just, if there was any tinge of, you know, of, you know, of
And the relationship now, is it still on ice?
It's not on ice, Dave, but it could be better, and it should be better.
Yeah,
is what I would say.
It's
not on my part. You know, I'm an individual that can fall out with someone.
We know that, Magger. We've done that ourselves.
And then I'll be speaking to you the next morning. Life's too short for grudges. I've never held a grudge in my life, and you know, and as I say, it had been a bit frosty. It's recovered a bit since, but. Didn't need to be. Really didn't need to be, because, you know, I would have helped in every way possible, and I have.
Yes.
If you look at last season, you know, with Jimmy, I helped him with as much as I could with players. I've done the same this year's season with Jimmy, and I've done the same with Lee, you know, on a few occasions this year. So yeah, that was never going to be. I don't want to see the demise of a football club I care deeply about.
But
it was a change room that played for me.
Yeah,
and not the club.
And the other thing,
I mean, the spin on that, Dave, is I didn't think anything less of Douse and the players that left my change room that I was coming into.
Yes,
it's football.
Yeah,
it is football.
Yeah, right. It is. No, but it's there's also a part of it when there's the length of time you've spent at the football club, and I've had the same chat with Simon Bassey, who spent 17 years at Wimbledon, and you. You know, I was saying to him, he was talking about they'd hit a real dip in form, might have been last season. I went, you're not responsible anymore.
Mm.
You know, you've done your best, but you've walked out the door. And I think that with people who spend that length of time, you can
still the first result.
Exactly, and that's
the truth. It's still
you
the
have
first,
to,
and I still when they've won, there's a feeling of
makes you feel
good.
Makes you feel good.
Exactly. And that's how it'll always be, because it's a club I care. So that's why I wanted it to be roses and rainbows when I walked out the door, like it was while I was in there. And maybe it wasn't the perfect ending that I really truly wanted it to be, and that's why it may be, you know, it may be upset me a little. But you move on.
And we'll move on. What I would say is that's why I'm always so happy, because one of my 27 teams will have won on a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But and so we go into Hampden, and you're 2 years into it now, and you know, I remember talking to you at the time, and I'd sort of a couple of months at St Albans, and I thought the chairman was a fool, and he didn't like me, and we didn't get on. But I genuinely loved the level, and I know I've spoke to you over the 2 years about different stuff. But so you go in the door, and tell me a little bit about the differences then.
It's funny. I've fallen in love with the level as well. I do think level 3 and level 4 was diluted slightly with the reforming of the pyramid as such. And it has made the Conference South a bigger gap from level 3 for sure, which it sort of happened in my first season. Mm. So I had to make them adjustments very quickly. Players that I thought were good enough for level 2 that I took from level 3 would maybe come up a little bit short. And not always to do with ability and quality and application. Some of it to do with health. you know, the health of this division. It seems to be fitter, it seems to be stronger, it's more efficient. And I said to you that, you know, you don't get too many chances. You know, you've got to work really hard to create chances, you know, and what you can't afford to do is give up cheap chances at the other end, because you tend to be punished. So there's an efficiency level, there's a professional level.
But that falls into what you are.
And I think I've made the adjustment really well. I mean, there'd be one or two supporters of Hampton maybe don't think that, but I feel I have, Dave. I'm not one that self-praises. I don't, you know, I'm not one of them that shouts from the rooftops when we do well. I'm not one of them that hides behind and looks for excuses when there's defeat or disappointment. I think we live in a world now of the social media world, which is a platform for criticism and direct criticism, and everyone's got a voice now. And it's so much noisier criticism than it is praise. Praise is very quiet, and you know, it's not, you know, and criticism is loud. So, you know, I made the adjustment. I'm still winning over one or two. I still think they're, but I'm sure that the real football people and the real people within the football club can see how I work. I you know, I'm very organised. I'm very structured. I'm very demanding. You know, every game, as I've just said to you, I treat every game like it's, you know, my last. I want to win at all costs. I'm very passionate. I'm very emotional, and I'm still like that on the sides. Yeah. You know, and it's what drives me on. But the level is something that I want to continue managing at, or, you know, obviously, or higher. You know, it is the level that you want to be at. It's the clubs are more professional, the pitches are, you know, better, the officials are slightly better.
You'll have to prove that to me.
But it is, you know, it's been thoroughly enjoyable. I've had to build two teams. You know, this summer we had some adjustments to make and some challenges and to deal with this year. But I was well equipped from the years I'd had at Hendon to be able to deal with the problems of the transformation.
That helps, doesn't it? You're not the kid that's walked in the door. You're
exactly.
I've 1,500 games on your belt.
And when the chairman sat down with me, I'm sure that was in his thinking. He'd taken over the club. It was his first experience of being a chairman of a football club. Graham Wood, who was the chairman who appointed me, he's a wonderful man, great chairman, real football man. Used to send stat sheets through to me and previous points totals and goals scored. Loved every bit of it because it's me, it's how I work. You know, Jax is a different approach. He's a real passionate, emotional football man. He's like your supporter chairman. You know, he wants to win at all costs. And, you know, and it's been a, you know, again, a building a relationship with a new chairman and, as I say, building a new team. But,
and that's massive. And we haven't touched on them really. We're lucky with Aver, God rest his soul, Aver Arbiter, who is magnificent. But talk a little bit about because I always think it's a massive relationship in any club.
I think it's really important. I mean, I've never avoided a chairman. I've never not win defeat or in victory have I avoided a chairman. I've spoke to him or rung him or faced him, and it's just how I've always been, you know. None of us intend to go out and get beat, you know. It's there's sometimes circumstances that are, you know, a bit of fortune, a bit of luck, a bit of, you know, health at times that, you know, that play its part. But I think with any chairman, you've got to be seen that you're diligent in how you work, your recruitment is right, and you're also spending their money effectively. It might be a group of supporters, but they're still a chairman at the top of it. And I've always managed like it. I treat every penny that I spend like it's my own. I'm not loose with my money. The players know that. If they miss training, they lose a third of their money. Yeah. If they get descent bookings, they lose a third of them. And all little bits that I don't have to implement that. I do it because I want a disciplined camp. Yeah. I want a structured camp. I also want the football club seeing I'm not going to let the changing room and the group run away with itself financially. Yeah. I'll manage every penny I get given to the best of my ability, maximise it to its full potential. And I think that's something the chairman need to see. They need to see you're a grafter.
Yeah.
I think the minute they see that you're not pulling your weight and doing what's required, I think you have an issue. But I think the one thing any chairman would look and see with myself is that I'm loyal and I'm trusting and I'm passionate. And they're three things that if you've got that, you know, you...
And where does that? I I run out of hunger. I run out of petrol, if you like, in the end. You know, all right, I went back and had that in the year. Funny enough, I would have meant to say it at the time. You're talking about how good one of your teams was. I had half of them in the Chertsey team at Wembley, yes, so I know exactly how good you are. So where does that energy and that hunger, how does that stick around for you? What's that about?
I think the feeling of and the emotion of winning, you know, it's instilled. It's, you know, I fear that time at some stage in my managerial career will come that I feel, you know, I've never come to it, Dave. I've never been at that point. There was a couple of periods at end and I thought, geez, is this worth it? You know, you know, it's taking an awful lot of my time here, and you know, it's, you know, am I getting the rewards that really you should be? The dark days are becoming longer. They're becoming dark weeks, and you know, and you. But I've just never lost the drive and the passion and the desire to be in a change room and be organising a team and looking to outwit and you know, better the opposition. I think that in itself is something I enjoy.
This level takes that up a notch, doesn't it? You know, we're at your training ground tonight at Bedfont, and it's immaculate. It's like so the days of come back to when you played yourself, when I was first coaching and managing, the days of the Thursday night finishing session and a keep ball.
Well, out the back under the back of the floodlights, out on Clitterhouse Park, which is what we trained at. I mean, it's moved on a notch, and I think.
So tonight you'll be structuring for Saturday. Yeah.
Exactly right. We'll be putting a session on that is geared around Saturday's opponents. You know, we're able to watch your position now at this level, which you couldn't do at level three unless you film the games or they put them up themselves.
Yeah.
It's you know, that it's one of the conference actual demands that you actually film your games. So I've got St Albans' last game that they played. They'll have my last game. So there's no hiding. So that when we talk about outwitting and outmaneuvering the opposition is a lot more difficult because they know more about than others did. We used to pick the phone up. Dave, did I play 4-4-2?
Yeah, that's true.
They were 4-3-3 last week. But now you're able to watch the game, look at the personnel, watch their set plays. Yeah. So you're evolving your set plays, you know, more often. And it is. It's a complete. It's that one notch under where we all want to be.
And that excites you. And
I think the players. I think, you know, when they step up to this, we haven't got huge finances. So some of the teams and their players are earning. You know, quite a bit more than us. But what we try and offer is, you know, a professional environment to work within, professional coaching that's going to look to improve you as a player, a team that's going to be competitive. Our pitch at Hampton's wonderful. It's looked after by Richard, who's doing a fantastic job.
Always was good, and it is now.
So as much as you might be able to earn an extra shilling or two elsewhere to Hampton, we do offer a real, you know, a real professional service. It's how all of my teams, even at Hendon, you know, like you said, the hive was expensive, but it was like, come and meet me at the training ground. This is where we train. You know, we play. So you had a little bit to offer. They could see that you're trying to be.
You always had good girls. Your lads always had good tracksuits, good warm up. You know,
all of that.
It was all that stuff.
I think training attire, match day attire, training facilities are as important as anything. Players want to feel good, look good, play good, and I think it's a big factor.
And we're coming to the end of it. You know, again, it's fluid. But I wanted to touch on your. Because you are a Chelsea season ticket holder, and you do go and you comment on it, and I'm always interested when Twitter always burst out laughing because you're not the average fan's view, you know. But when you sit and you watch Chelsea's game, do you see it as clear as you sit and watch Hampton's game?
No, because I'm a fan, you know, and I'm kicking every ball as such. I'm shouting, you know, not obscenity, but you're shouting, you know. But you know what I do now, Dave, and I've done it more so in the last two or three years. Since, you know, I look at mine and it makes me look at myself to how I demand of my players and criticise my players when I look at Premier League games. They may do it less often, but they're making the same mistakes.
Absolutely, and they're getting grand a week.
I watched the game on Tuesday night and I'm looking at wingers not, you know, doing what was required out of possession, not getting between the posts when there's a cross coming in from the other side. And things we work on and what we talk about, and you relate to it and you're thinking, well, he's not doing it. And, you know, it doesn't change you, the demands you put on your own players, but it does highlight that, you know, footballers are footballers. They're they switch off. They can be not as intelligent as you want them to be at times, you know.
Yes.
Because it's the ones you have to tell fewer times are the ones that are the better ones. So it happens right to the top level. But I watch the games as open-minded as I can tactically and, you know, technically. And but, you know, I'm interested in is Chelsea winning, if I'm being honest.
Well, so
the other night was, you know, we walked out there kicking each other, me and the boys. You know.
But when you... You see, when I go and watch a game now, and I tend not to go and watch Premiership, I tend to go and watch non-league, and I'll come down and see you soon. But I genuinely enjoy watching the game, right? Mm-hmm. I hated watching the game as a manager.
Mm.
So, do you enjoy watching your team play?
Dave, mate, I enjoy watching my team play, but you get caught up in the emotion. I watch the games back now because the videos we get sent on Monday is our own game and the opposition that we're playing the following week.
Yeah.
So I tend to have a look at ours first and look at if what I said at half time and full time was correct, because you know yourself, you picture things within a game.
Yeah.
Did he tuck round or did he drop in or did he?
Yeah.
And
now you can see it.
I can see it instantly. So there's no grey area. So tend to on a Monday in the WhatsApp group, either put a little clip of a video or a picture or an offside, whatever it be. So that's moved on slightly. But yeah, in the emotion of managing your team, I don't think you watch them with as relaxed as you'd like to be. But you know, it's football, Dave. I watch every game that's on. I watch the German league. I watch the Italian league. I'm watching national. I'm actually recording national league games now. I'm watching them on my iPad that are on BT Sport. Football is just, and it's been like that, as I say, since I was a kid, and the wife's got used to it, the family. I've got four boys, and they'll tell you, I watch as much football as all four of them put together. It's just, it's how I am. But it's always on. It's always on.
Well, long may it continue. 1 hour, 25 seconds. That's not bad for me and you, you know. Mr. McCann, thank you very much.
Thoroughly enjoyable, Dave.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.